I really think it was some kind of divinely guided interference, you know, that this thing came across my table, because otherwise, I mean, no other geek than myself, I think, would have reacted. He says, NATO has called for a crisis meeting in Brussels. All the ministers of defense have been called into a crisis meeting, and it's going on right now. And his words, he said, it's all because of your warning. They were trying to create an absolute takeover of the New World Order on all levels. So,
with the COVID-19 virus crisis and the number of casualties with the flu, if you have not been looking at C60 as a means to significantly improve your immunities by now, you should be. Here's why. First, a strong and healthy immune system is your body's first defense. And for those with a strong immune system, your body will adequately fight viruses without medical intervention. Second, C60 is safe as long as you are taking high quality C60 with no added fillers or solvents. Third, C60 is the best means of removing free radicals from your body that exists. It's at least 200 times better at this function than vitamin C and any other antioxidant. Fourth, as Dr. Chu Li stated on a previous show, COVID-19 creates massive amounts of free radicals, which is causing organ failure for those with weaker immune systems. So now it becomes clear you need the best free radical fighter that exists, and that is C60 with black seed oil and curcumin. Why black seed oil and curcumin? Because these two ingredients are the absolute best at supporting C60 to fight viruses and to improve your immune system. Go to sarahwestall.com/shop and learn more about why this formula is so powerful for building your immunities. And it's now available in gel capsules and by diffuser for more serious needs. Be sure to read the research and, of course, use the current coupons to save money when you buy. Patrons also receive a 10% discount. You can find that code at patreon.com/sarahwestall. Remember, keeping you and your family safe is the most important thing you can do. Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have Ole Demigard coming back, and he is considered the expert at figuring out the agendas of the New World Order Deep State. And he has determined months ahead of time, 59 times before a false flag was going to occur, before an attack was going to occur, 59 times, which is pretty remarkable. And he's also won the Prague Peace Prize, and he's highly respected. He does speeches all over the place. He's practically a household name in certain countries in Europe. And I feel honored to have him on. You can tell he's very censored, and they claim he does hate speech and he bullies and all that. But if you knew him, and you could just tell when he talks, he is the kindest soul there is. And to claim that he has hate speech and things is just absolutely absurd. But anyways, we're going to talk about what he believes is the overall agenda and plan right now. He identified something that was going on in October that he thinks puts this whole piece together of this whole lockdown and how they're missing part of the, why it seems so weird right now, because they didn't get to implement their whole goals. And he explains it and what happened. And then he stays after for my patrons and also for his. We're going to post it on both pages. And this is an exclusive. I shared with him that Sweden was kind of a beacon of light because they didn't do this whole lockdown like they are here and other places. And he was saying that Sweden's actually being used for different purposes, almost a model for the New World Order. And he explains that for our patrons. And it was kind of sad when he said that to me, because I was like, oh, they aren't doing a lockdown, it's working. Well, they have another agenda behind it and why, how they're pointing to it and so forth. So he's going to explain that for my patrons. And you can get that at patreon.com/sarahwestall. And I also want to thank you who supports me by shopping my affiliates on my website at sarahwestall.com/shop. That's what keeps us going. As you know, YouTube completely demonetized my channel. And only way I keep this going is through my affiliates and through my Patreon. So thank you so much for supporting me that way. And let's get into this really great interview with Ole Demigard. Ole, thank you so much for rejoining the program.
It's my absolute pleasure, Sarah.
You are, you're the best at figuring out what these agendas are, and because it's so perplexing, we do know that there's all these, you know, from my standpoint, I look and I see all these multiple agendas, from eugenics to, you know, the currency to the Green New Deal, and maybe they're all combined, the New World Order. But you have a knack for really putting things into perspective. Can you kind of take us through what you're seeing? Because this is a worldwide phenomena. What are you seeing from your research as to what's really going on?
Big question. And have you got like 6 hours? Sarah, would it be okay for you to take you on a little trip back in time, just a few months? Because I truly believe that what we're seeing in the world today is a very strange phenomena where a lot of the pieces are missing. It doesn't really make sense. And there's a lot of confusion about this virus. And it seems like in this puzzle, there are pieces missing. And I believe that I stumbled across some incredible information that made me, with the help of others, stop what would actually being planned, which was so much worse than what we're experiencing now. So if it would be okay with you, I would like to ramble on for a little while and take you, and I will come back to the situation with.
Yeah, walk us through what happened. I think that's important.
Okay, so it would sound like it has nothing to do with Corona, but I'll get there. Okay, so I was on tour in Sweden in October of 2019, and I was being heavily attacked. I think I'm the only one that has been stopped in Sweden, because apparently I'm very hateful and a bully. I don't know. But that is it. I'm being censored, and also the places we go to are being shut down right before we arrive to the places. They have threatened the people that keep the meetings and so on. So we had to find a new way of doing it. And also, while on tour, I had multiple threats. I would hit with directed energy weapons for the first time. So now I know what that feels like. And that's not speculation on my part. There was somebody in the audience who came up afterwards showing me measurement equipment, showing what had happened while I was on stage. So not my speculation. And this is a highly respected person in Sweden anyway, this guy who came up. And also we had a subtle death threat, one of the hosts there. So what I'm saying is that we seem to have been over target of something, you know. So one of the things that I was exposing on this tour, and very going into extreme detail, was the alleged terror attack in Stockholm in April 2017, which was an alleged truck attack, where a beer truck was hijacked and driven down a pedestrian street, killing 5 people and injuring a lot others, and then ramming right into like a mall, in through the window of the mall. So very dramatic, on a Friday afternoon, central Stockholm. So the thing is that to start with, what looks like a horrible terror attack, once you start pulling it apart and starting tracking down all the witnesses, checking out all the details, and like you said, for some reason, but it is actually because I've spent almost 40 years digging into these things, I become quite good at it. Or I would say I'm almost like Rain Man in this area. Put me in a kitchen, disaster. Put me under the hood of a car, absolutely no good. Put me in this area and suddenly, boom, I don't know, but that here, this is apparently where I belong at this time and space. Anyway, so what I was pointing out was all the inside of what actually happened in this attack. And one of the things that I stumbled across was a video that I don't think was really meant for public eyes. It's almost like a TED talk. I can send you the video. And there's this man called Ola Slettenmark, who is the chief of security, the chief of something called Samverkan in Stockholm. He is sort of the spider in the web between secret police, the intelligence, military, government, ambulance drivers, police, fire brigades, and so on. So in a case of an emergency, like a disaster of some kind of thing, he is the guy that coordinates this whole thing. Very important position to have. And he was, some months after this alleged terror attack, he did this presentation that was filmed, and he walks around on stage very, very confident, almost arrogant, I would say. And his presentation is called The Drill That Became Reality. And one of the things with all of these false flags that I've exposed is the drill is always there. The drill is always there. Sometimes multiple drills, which was the case here, where they prepare, they rehearse, and then when everything is set, boom, they go live. And that's when you see what is claimed to be a terror attack. And what he says in this is absolutely mind-blowing, because he walks around and it's a very professional presentation. And then he says, 1 minute before the attack, he sent out a mass email to all the key people in the different organizations, raising the terror threat level to the highest level, 1 minute before the attack even happened. I mean, how is that possible? It's like phoning in and saying Kennedy was just shot like 1 minute before it actually happened. How can you do that if you're not on the inside? And this is, and then he goes on and he describes what they did the whole first hour when they shut down the train systems, they shut down all the bus lines, all traffic, public traffic. They shut in parts of the defense ministry, the Ministry of Defense. They shut down part of their parliament. They all of these things within the first hour before the driver was even caught. It was at a time where this could have been like a case of a drunken driver or a heart attack that this truck, who knows what had happened. But right, I mean, 1 minute before, it was labeled a terror attack and they acted accordingly. Meaning, here is a total insider, part of a massive operation. So for me, things like that are like golden nuggets, because I don't have to prove anything. I just say, look at the guy, listen to what he's saying. It is incredible. And very often,
it's obvious.
When you see these type of people, I believe that they see themselves as patriots, often military right-wing type of people. And they think that we are not able to control ourselves, but that we need to be controlled. And the thing with several of these people are that they become arrogant, because they believe they're untouchables, and then they become careless or they make mistakes like this thing. To say a thing like that 1 minute before, it's like, how stupid can you get? But I don't think he was aware of what he was actually saying. Anyway, so if you want to see what a real terrorist looks like.
Can I play a little bit of that clip? Because you played it in your video. I'd love to play so they can see that.
Okay, I'm going to show the clip right now, but it's not English. So I'm going to do the words for you. If we look at the conditions behind the happening, there were a number of dimensions that we were prepared to take care of. Immediate needs, coordination, information needs. Extensive traffic and infrastructure disturbances, crisis support, and so on. Next step in all this would be a drill, and we prepared for a drill named Stijorn on May 10th. I hacked that name. We never came so far as to carry it through. Since the incident on April 7th came before, as part of this drill, I sent out an email on the 7th of April at 1452. Repeat, as part of this drill, I sent out an email on the 7th of April at 1452. 1 minute before, exclamation, the first emergency call came in. With the direction, we had just increased the terror threat alert. Repeat this one more time. As part of this drill, I sent out an email on the 7th of April at 1452. 1 minute before, exclamation, the first emergency call came in. With the direction, we had just increased the terror threat alert to all municipals and corresponding head level in the region. Two pictures showing the drill that became reality. The attack at Drottningham Gatten, I chopped that up as well, on the 7th of April. Then came this event, which we had prepared as a drill. That became reality. What are the chances of that? Hour and the actions that took place. 2:53 p.m., the first emergency call to SOS. 3:08 p.m., we called for a collaboration conference in accordance with the routines we had worked out and those communication devices which the different actors now had identified. 3:15 p.m., We started up the coordination staff that we had created room for. 3:17 p.m., the first secured information went out when we had defined this as a suspected terror attack. We also used the systems implemented as VIS.
But one thing you said that is so different from what we're experiencing here, and that's why I don't believe in the left-right paradigm anymore, because a lot of people think the right or the neo, you know, military, but in our area, the left governors, the people who are considered left, are the ones that are cracking down and doing these draconian measures and shutting off free speech and doing all these things. And the people who are considered fringe right are the ones that go, well, we just want freedom and truth and don't want you to hurt people. It's completely flipped on its head.
When it comes to politics, it's set up the same way in most countries that I've seen. It's like this: a hand, you got the left, you got the right, then you got a few ones in the middle, or the Republicans, the conservatives, whatever. But what you don't see is that the hand belongs to me. So whatever you choose, I have selected beforehand, and then you can see me play the whole, blah, 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 it's still me. And this is where I don't even focus on politics at all. I think it's a total waste of time because it's a rigged game. And the people that you see to get up to that level, they have to corrupt themselves. Otherwise, you will not get to that level. I have that from insiders. So it's only corrupted or people that involuntarily have been corrupted or set up that are allowed up there to play out the game. So total waste of time, and in my opinion. And I loved it. I had a friend, Maxine, who was he was asked if he votes. And he said, no, sorry, I don't support organized crime. I thought that was so brilliantly put. So on a lower level, politicians, for sure, they mean well, they really have high ambitions for good and so on. But to get up on that level, we're talking about where you really start becoming able to make a difference. Up until now, either they shut you down, or if you really push and get up there, they will terminate you, or they use their own players, corrupt individuals.
Yeah, I always say that there's, you're either clueless and they can manipulate you, or you're not and you're smart, and then they either blackmail you so they can control you, or they get rid of you. So bottom line, they're controlling everybody who's up there. That's how I always say it. But I agree with you, because the labels are different right now. So what happened when you realized that this guy, what did you stop from happening that was bigger than what we're occurring right now?
The thing was that I just felt fine, great. Now I got one of them. Now I know one is involved in this whole thing. And so I started checking out different areas, among other things, his Twitter account. And this was a small little account with just 217 followers, something like that. I checked out the different people that was following it, and most of them were connected to military intelligence, these type of things, strategic, a lot of long words that says absolutely nothing, resilience board, this and that. So I thought, okay, let me see what he's up to. And I saw also that he was working with an international organization that were with at least six what they call resilient cities, Manchester, London, Rotterdam, Stockholm, and Paris, Barcelona, these countries, or these cities together, but also connected to the 100 resilient cities, all of it funded by the Rockefellers. So here we have suddenly a Swedish guy in a key position in Stockholm, indirectly funded by the Rockefellers in this massive network. And I started seeing that he had been in different locations where alleged terror attacks had happened more or less at the same time as well. So I thought, whoa, wait a second, here is something that could be interesting. So I kept digging, and then I found he said this was on the 21st of October. These dates are important. So on the 21st of October, I stumbled across this whole thing. And so I saw that he was at this time, he was in Barcelona in Spain, and he said it's very emotional to be here. this is also where not long after the alleged terror attack in Stockholm happened, there was a very similar attack on Las Ramblas, which is a pedestrian street in Barcelona. The only difference, more or less, was that it was a van, a rental van there, instead of a truck in Stockholm, but very similar. So I was like, why is it emotional for him to be there on Las Ramblas? And also the way that he has taken a photo where the memorial writing in the pavement, it was taken in sort of like with a wide wing angle lens, so it looked like a pyramid shape with the text in it, because it was all, the perspective made it like a pyramid. So I thought, whoa, you know. And then he said, we've just celebrated our 500th meeting. That's 500. That is a lot of meetings, I tell you, if you are in Stockholm and not nowhere else. And then I came across another one, and this was just a few days before the 21st of October. He said, we have now decided on 39 locations coordinated with a duration of 36 hours. The dates will be October 23 and 24.
Where did you find this? This was on his Twitter?
It was on his Twitter account.
Oh my gosh, did you get copies of that?
Yeah.
Can you send me some of that so I can put it up?
For sure. So, but also, the thing is that they've been deleted from my computer, but thank God I've got backups and in all different places. So, you know, they have this incredible tendency to just disappear, vaporize from my computer over and over again. So I'm like, I have hard drives everywhere, you know. And anyway, so I thought, whoa, what the hell is this? Because when you see the type of lingo, had this been like a drug dealer, you know, like if they were, like I sometimes say, if they had been talking about lettuce or salad or something, you would know if this is...
Or a pedophile.
Yeah.
Talking about pizza and whatever else.
And whatever.
Yeah.
But
yep.
Here, he's just said, we have now decided on 39 locations here. So the locations were Manchester and London in the United Kingdom. And these dates, the 23rd and 24th October, that was exactly when the so-called Brexit referendum was going to take place, right at that time span. You know, so in, and also Manchester and London are both cities that was involved in this network that he was working for, these six different cities. And both of these cities have been the targets of alleged terror attacks, multiple attacks in the UK. It's more or less but only these two places where so-called attacks have happened. And I've exposed every single one of them as inside jobs. So if you look at it with their type of lingo, 39 coordinated drills, or whatever they want to call it, in my way of understanding what they were saying was, oh my God, they're possibly planning a 39 coordinated attack against Europe at this time. This was what I just felt, what? So I started digging into, I mean, I was shocked, I tell you, because I felt, well, excuse my language, but it was like, fuck me. Like, what is this? Is this, this would be like bigger than 9/11, you know, because we're talking about NATO countries and the whole, how with the tentacles out in the world, what happened. So also this whole thing about leaving the European Union is a tool of the New World Order, just like NATO and the World Health Organization. So many of these, what looks on the surface beautiful organizations, are deeply criminal once you start looking into what they're actually doing. I mean, it's anyway, so I looked at the next place. So that would have sorted out the England not leaving the European Union, because the thing is, if one country leaves, that could then make other countries get the same type of thinking, you know. That was what Norway was trying to get out of the bombings of Libya in 2011, and boom, just a few weeks after they were suggesting it, they were hit with a mass shooting on Utøya and the blowing up of the government building. And then their prime minister, who was deeply involved in that operation, was rewarded the job of chief of NATO, which he, during his career, had been totally opposite. You know, like, it's the same play of absolute nonsense. Anyway, so that was England. Then we had, the next place was Paris, France. That's where they have major problems with the Yellow Vest movements. So had these attacks happened, 39 attacks, it's so many. Do you know, like, if these had been in only six cities, what they were talking about, 39 attacks, just imagine, boom, 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 boom.
That would have been absolutely intense. What did you think they were going to blame it on? Because everybody would have thought that they were at war. I mean, that this is a major. So what do you think they were trying to do?
They were trying to create an absolute takeover of the New World Order on all levels. So the next, that was Paris, France. So had something like 39 coordinated attacks blamed on terrorists, you know, that would have been justifying martial law in all of these countries. It would have been shut down the whole of Europe. They would shut down the internet as we know it, because it's like the terrorists would have been communicating with Snapchat and Facebook and Twitter, whatever they could come up with. So for our security, they would shut all of these down. They would do exactly what they are doing now, put us in quarantine, you know, where we would not be allowed, for our security, out in the streets. We would not be able to move, to demonstrate. We would not be able to meet up in groups. They could use this as an excuse to just shut us down. Then you have Barcelona, same problem there. Catalonia is trying to leave Spain and thus the European Union. That is a big problem. So that would also have taken care of that. Then you had Sweden, where the plan was for two drills at a power station, one water power station up Älvkarleby, and the other one, a nuclear power plant in Forsmark, which is also have been involved in some illegal trading of uranium-235 for atomic weapons. So the final place was Rotterdam in the Netherlands. And I didn't understand why Rotterdam was of any interest. And then I spoke to a naval officer, and she told me that Rotterdam is actually the port when it comes to import food and other necessities for the whole of Europe. Meaning, if you knock out the harbor or the port of Rotterdam, you can create famine in Europe within a week or so. So what I just felt, oh my God. And then I also found out, when I looked at the date, it was 23rd and 24th of October. On the 24th of October is the day of the United Nations, meaning had any of these terror attacks been aimed at the NATO headquarters, which is the tool of the United Nations, then that would justify military retaliation, just like it was not a coincidence that they picked Pentagon as one of the targets on 9/11. That was to justify military retaliation. Otherwise, had it only been private civilian targets, they could not do it. So here, I would very strongly suggest that one of the targets at least were the headquarters of NATO in Brussels, Belgium. So when I saw that, I just felt, oh my God. Oh my. First, I felt almost sick to my stomach, because it was like I'd never, ever come across anything that could be on a scale like this, nowhere near it. So I just felt, okay, what to do? We got like 48 hours. So what I did was I started at 4 p.m. In the afternoon. I had a friend who has a channel called Wake Up Globe, who was visiting me at the time when we were on tour. He had his camera with him. So I just said, let's go into the kitchen. We just turn off the fan, on with the lights. Boom. We did one like 10-minute warning in Swedish, one 10-minute in English. And then I continued together with my tour organizer, Johnny Cash. We continued for about 12 hours doing short interviews all over the world. I've got an incredible network after all of these years. I've done like between 500 and 1,000 interviews internationally. So, and I have these fantastic radio hosts like yourself, brave, fast, efficient, ready to go, you know, if needed. So I continued doing that until 4 a.m. And like one, like Jason Liasatos, who works outside the box with David Icke, he went out on his bicycle in the middle of a rainy night, I think 2 a.m. in the morning, down the road into the studio, switched everything on, and we got that out. Amazing, amazing. And then in every interview, I said, anyone listening to this, please share, share, share. This is pure speculation, but I'm saying if what I see is true, then this could destroy the world as we know it. So please, please share it. Okay, so we came to October the 23rd, and nothing happened. I mean, very, very little, nothing, and not the drills either, because they were talking about, it went under the name of Operation Sea Eagle in Sweden, and they were talking about 1,600 people involved in that alone, these power plant drills there. So just imagine the size of it, like the London 7/7 bombings, there was more than 1,500 people involved. I mean, we're talking big, big operations, but more or less nothing happened. So I was like, I don't know, maybe I was wrong, but at least nobody got hurt, you know, so maybe I looked like an idiot, not a problem for me. And then a few hours later, I received an email from a freelance journalist in Brussels. That's the heart of Europe and also the headquarters of NATO. That's where it's located. And this guy told me, I've been here working in Brussels for quite a few years. I've got incredible intel in military. I've got different sources from, and the last few months we've been feeling that something major is building up, but we have not been able to figure out what is going on. They've been feeling this thing. And then we saw your warning. And he said, suddenly everything fell into place. And at that time, before that happened, I checked the number of views internationally, what I could see without all of the sharings, and we were up to a couple of 100,000 views. So a lot of focus on this, which is the only defense we have in situations like this.
Yep, yep.
So anyway, he said, are you aware of what's happening in Brussels right now? I said, I have absolutely no idea. He says, NATO has called for a crisis meeting in Brussels. All the ministers of defense have been called into a crisis meeting, and it's going on right now. And his words, he said, it's all because of your warning. That's his words, not, I don't know. I have no idea. That's what he said, being there. So during this duration of 36 hours, there was a lot going on. One of the things, there was an article published by a well-respected website called VoltaireNet.org, where Prime Minister write articles and stuff. It's like high level stuff. And in that, there was an article the day after saying NATO near implosion, that the whole thing is falling apart. Then you had all the Israelis globally were shut down, all of them, because of a general strike.
What was shut down? The Israeli, you said the Israeli,
all the Israeli embassies were shut down the day after.
Oh, embassies. Okay.
Yeah. All, I think the consulates and the embassies globally, all of them shut down. So what was that? But this journalist in Brussels said it's connected with this thing. I don't know. I can only say it happened more or less like this. And at the same time, Vice President Mike Pence and the Secretary of Defense was called back urgently from the Middle East for some meetings in Washington. All of it happening, boom, 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 boom. You know, and I don't know. I can only say the timing was doot, 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 doot. And then Donald Trump steps forward and says, the day after, he says, we've now, great news, we managed to kill ISIS leader al-Baghdadi. Okay, that's excellent news. Only one slight problem. It's the fourth time you officially go out and say that you killed him. So what's up with that? So what was that? Was it, I'm only speculating, was that some kind of diversion? You know, look over here, away from what's going on there. So this was on, and then on October the 25th, which was during this duration of 36 hours, the chief of NATO, Jens Stoltenberg, which I mentioned before, he had a press conference. I don't know why he had it, because there was no real reason. It was a very short one, And he just said to the press, welcome, welcome. But his voice was like this. He was speaking like, he looked terrified. In my opinion, he looked terrified. And his voice was like this. Because I believe I really think it was some kind of divinely guided interference, you know, that this thing came across my table. Because otherwise, I mean, no other geek than myself, I think, would have reacted.